Welcome to this episode of Let's Talk About by Kangaroo Minds. I'm Vedika, and today we have with us Ms. Anupriya Das Singh. Anupriya is a psychotherapist with more than 15 years of experience in clinical practice. Anupriya at present works as a senior manager within the healing services team at Arpan, where her role demands counseling mentors, at the same time helping with case supervision in cases of trauma and child sexual abuse. Anupriya is a certified CBT practitioner, art therapist, EMDR therapist, as well as a dance-based therapist. And she has effectively trained groups of students and mental health professionals in the space of trauma counseling. Our conversation with Anupriya today is going to center around the theme of child abuse and the implications it has for mental health. However, before we begin, we would like to put out a trigger warning for our audiences. If at any point during this conversation, should you find yourself feeling triggered or distressed, we urge you to take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. And now, without taking much time, let's dive in to hear more from Anupriya. Anupriya, welcome to the episode. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Vedika, for inviting us in. Thank you so much. So wherever there is mental health subjects spoken and talked about, it becomes very important to address these important issues that you just mentioned in the topic. So completely glad, completely happy to be here.
No, and I know, Anupriya, you have a very, you know, wide experience in this space of, you know, trauma and working with individuals who've been survivors of abuse. But you know, before we get into more on those aspects, which we will come to later in the conversation, I think, you know, for our audiences, can you tell us, you know, what are the various forms of abuse which exist?
Yes, definitely. Before we even enter into what can be done, it is very important to understand what is actually going on. So if we look at abuse as a spectrum, so if we look at abuse, it has a varied spectrum, a lot of areas if we go into specifically child abuse, you would notice that any kind of ill treatment by a person who is in the position of some kind of responsibility or trust, if that happens on the child, that would be defined as abuse. If you look at the abuse, it has a lot of subcategories to it. So abuse can take different forms. One of the most common forms that we have seen is physical abuse, where any kind of hitting, beating the child with either hand, using some object, stick, some kind of, you know, kicking the child, even burning. Many times you have had incidents where, you know, use of cigarette burns were seen, you know, the child is abused through that. So that kind of abuse would fall into the category of physical abuse. Beyond that, you have other forms of abuse also. One of the less spoken about is emotional abuse, or when we call, we more call it as verbal abuse, where the child is emotionally abused. It would include belittling the child, comparison, verbally abusing the child, even bullying. Like verbal bullying would come under emotional abuse because the child is emotionally ill-treated. The next form comes as neglect. Now, neglect is not seen very clearly because it's the absence of the protection that has been promised for the child, which is not given. So many times you would notice parents, because of either lack of awareness or under some psychological concerns, fail to provide the basic necessities. Basic necessities like food, clothing, shelter, medical care, supervision, anything that would actually enhance the growth of the child is not given to the child, and that would come under neglect, and these has huge repercussions on the adulthood. And the last but not the least, which we specialize in, is sexual abuse, commercial or exploitation, any kind. So the sexual abuse is a part which ARPAN specializes in, and we very clearly look at prevention and intervention, that is healing of children who have gone through that. So right. What is sexual abuse? The sexual abuse, if you look at, is it could be any act for sexual gratification if it's done by a more powerful person. So there are three things, like on the child. So if a child goes through any act by a powerful person, which is sexual in nature, that would be termed as abuse, and that can take many forms, like contact, non-contact, even showing pornographic videos would come under sexual abuse. So it ranges from showing something to touching to even penetrative assault. So these are the whole forms of abuse, if you would want to understand this. Right. Yeah.
You know, I think that's been quite insightful, just to understand that abuse doesn't just take one form, but there are multiple ways in which, abuse towards children or even in general can manifest. But moving forward, what would be some signs that you would say that, someone can look out for, which would suggest that a child is being abused?
So if we want to look at the signs, initially, if you would see a child who's going through any kind of abuse, either physical, emotional, sexual abuse, a lot goes on inside the mind of the child, which might not come out in that moment. However, in some situations where you deal with children again and again, like for example, a teacher taking care of the whole set of children in a class might be able to notice certain very specific signs that she can just pick it up. What she would pick it up is more like unexplained changes in behavior or personality. The child is usually a very talkative child and is very friendly with other children. And suddenly the teacher is noticing that something has changed here. The child has started either becoming completely withdrawn or suddenly has gotten very aggressive and very angry. That is one of the signs that the child has, the teacher or somebody, a caregiver, would have to notice that, okay, there is something that needs intervention. So we are not still talking that whether it would be abuse or not, but there is definitely something going on. Yeah. Other signs would be very clearly noticed is the child becoming very anxious. So if a child is getting abused, there are certain triggers that get the child anxious. And suppose if those triggers are found in the outside world, somebody speaking very firmly, a raised voice, suddenly you would see changes in the child. The child might get very anxious.
Right.
One of the other things that you would notice is there is lot to process when a child is going through abuse. So there is a lot going on inside the mind. So there is less attention outside the system. So these children might just become completely, into themselves, would not be able to make friends or socialize. Sometimes the pain is so bad that you might even notice self-harm behavior. And if it's a school setup, then you might notice a dip in a school performance also. The child who's scoring very good marks and suddenly something has changed in the performance. Now, these are the things that needs to be picked up in any kind of abuse, I would say. However, if I go very specific of child sexual abuse, so there are some a bit more added points that you might want to look at so that you can intervene. This child, if the child is going through abuse, there is a possibility that the child might be using certain inappropriate words very much to their age, inappropriate to their age. So they might be using certain words that otherwise that the same age group is not using. That might just alarm you to have a conversation with the child to just understand what's going on. Some severe abuses also lead to reenactment. Reenactment is basically the pain that the child has gone through would be seen repeated outside with somebody else. So if the child is getting touched, might start touching other school children or fellow neighbors. If the child is getting beaten up, might get into the bullying spectrum, that might beat other child just to feel the sense of power. So you might notice that happening. One of the things is, there is a strong need to go away from that space. So whenever they are triggered, it is also seen that they want to stay away from the conversation or people. So running away, missing situations also come a lot in abuse-based situation. So many runaway cases, so many such situations you would find. And it's common to child sexual abuse as well. So these, if you keep noticing, basically in summarizing, sudden behavior change for some period of time would need intervention for you to find out what's going on. Right?
So, I think, Anupriya, just moving forward, do you think, especially we've seen it a lot happen now with, the digital age, especially during COVID as well, where children have been spending a lot of time online, on the internet, and on social media. Do you think that's made them more vulnerable or, more targeted as victims of abuse?
Yes. So since the pandemic hit, since the lockdown started, what we have been noticing is the online time share has increased a lot because of obvious reasons. The schooling was completely shifted to the online medium. There is a difference between before lockdown and now. Before, what used to happen is the child has gone out, met with friends. Parents were somewhere aware what friends are, which are the friends that the child tends to meet more often. They would have some idea of the surrounding. However, now a lot of time is spent online, and through different levels of social media, these are very unknown kind of friends who befriend a child, which we basically look through. If I look through child sexual abuse lens, it would be more like a grooming process.
Yes.
Somebody who is trying to lure the child to finally, possibly abuse the child. What has also happened? So if you look at the data also, the CSAM data, child sexual abuse material, Interpol did an assessment in 2020. They found out that 3.5 million searches happened about child sexual abuse material before lockdown, which increased to 7 million during lockdown. Such a huge change. And also even the sentence, people would look out for, I want to rape a 6-year-old, that kind of search tripled during lockdown. Now, if you notice, a lot is going on the other side of the net, and you do not know where the child is talking to, whom the child is talking to, and other things. That kept aside, other aspects are also getting difficult. Because there is so much of spending time online, the core social skills that the child used to learn before interacting with trusted people, adults, and friends in the physical world is also somewhere getting hampered, which is increasing the risk of other kinds of abuse also. So not only child sexual abuse, you would notice, because they do not know how to protect themselves, it has also increased, spread out in other forms as well. So yes, definitely the social media and online thing has played a big, huge role in making, the children vulnerable. So something definitely needs to be done about it.
And I think, as you mentioned, it's not just about child sexual abuse, but also, like online bullying and cyberbullying
right.
has also really increased, right? And it's very difficult, especially on social media platforms, to sort of
yes,
what's that kind of bullying and because children are spending so much time online, it's very difficult to, again, as you said, catch what's going on sometimes. But so, you know, moving forward, like, especially when we talk about, you know, child abuse or even child sexual abuse, so can you tell us a little bit about what are the short-term as well as the long-term mental health implications that that has on a child?
Okay, yes, yes. So, if you look at, so in the initial part where I spoke about how abuse tends to impact emotionally. Mm-hmm. Now, when a child is abused, the first reaction is pain, the emotion, right? So at the first stage, like, for example, the immediate consequence of any abuse is, you know, the child getting really, really getting surge of emotions. So when we speak to many children that we offer therapy to, children talk about while the abuse was happening, they felt strong surge of anger, fear, you know, there was shock, shame, guilt. So confusion was one of the most common things because the children could not understand a person whom they would trust so much, a person who is supposed to provide support, is actually either hitting them or sexually abusing them. So there is a lot of mixed emotions and painful impact. So the initial part is this, that you would notice in children. Then the impact grows. It would not stay there. It would grow to the thought behavior level, where the children would start feeling, because the abuse is continuing and there is no support provided while this is happening, the child would start feeling that, you know, they must have done something. That's why this is happening to them. It is their fault. Or deeper cognitions might set in form of belief that I'm not loved. I'm not wanted. No one likes me. So children, if you see, psychologically have this feeling, whatever happens around them, they tend to feel that it's happening because of them. So parents fighting with each other, they would feel that, okay, I must have done something wrong. These two are fighting with each other, even though there is no correlation. So in abuse also, you getting hit, the child getting hit, or the child getting abused in any form, emotional, comparison, child would start feeling that I am responsible, I am at fault, I have caused pain and that's why I'm getting all of this. And that forms a very strong vicious cycle. Because of this whole situation that is going on in the child's mind, you would see strong behavioral changes happening. So after this immediate, you would start noticing the child, the one that we spoke just now about, you know, the child would start showing up, acting out. The anger would start coming out in the behavior. The pain would start coming out in form of withdrawal or, you know, isolation. And it would also affect eating and sleeping habits. So the things that are core to us, like when we are completely feeling safe and happy, you would see that you're emotionally regulated and you are completely, you know, you're happily sleeping and eating. So these are the three areas that strongly get affected when you see a child going through abuse. So, and if you go further, like long term, I might want to talk about what happens when, you know, they become an adult. But this is what currently you would see as clear short and long term impact that can be noticed.
Right. Can you, Anupriya, just throw a little bit of light, you know, on, like, you know, the long term, as you mentioned, like the adulthood implications of being, you know, a child survivor?
Yes. Let's assume that the child has gone through, you know, multiple trauma, you know, possibly neglect or physical abuse in the childhood. Mm-hmm. And somehow the child crossed that space and became an adult. Suppose if the child did not get any support or any kind of healing, the whole pain that was going on in the childhood would start reflecting in different aspects of adulthood. And one of the main things that we have noticed during therapeutic process is the inability to trust. Why this tends to come is because the core factor, that is somebody whom you trusted so much, has betrayed you. So there is no guideline, there is no emotional understanding of what are the parameters of trusting. So I am not sure whether I should trust or not. And that is majorly seen when they become adult, or, you know, in adulthood, they would take a lot of time to even believe something or trust something. Now, naturally, if that tends to happen, any relationship would demand trust to grow. So in adulthood, one of the long-term impact you would notice is they would have trouble sustaining relationships, because the core foundation, that trust, is not yet worked on, and that is causing trouble in sustaining relationships. Another thing that we have noticed is inaccurate judgments. So you would not know how much is too much, how much is too little, because there is no learning that has come in your childhood. So if I take it from the context of child sexual abuse, this adult would not know how much touching is appropriate and how much to stop before. Or if I take it from the physical abuse perspective, this adult would not understand that hitting the child would cause emotional concerns to the child, and they would take it as the process. Right. So that is one major thing that is noticed. They also become many times target of domestic violence, simply because in the past they have taken so much that it's become a learning in their neural system. So even in future, if they get somebody who's a perpetrator, they would continue with that, with the similar kind of accommodation in their minds. The opposite is also true. Some of children who have gone through any kind of abuse might even become perpetrator. Perpetrator in the sense, somebody who would hit or abuse, or, you know, child sexual abuse can happen through. So they are the person responsible in abuse. Okay. Child sexual abuse specific, if I would say, so then there is, as I told you, there is a reenactment that tends to happen. Even in adulthood, you would notice overly sexualized behavior that tends to happen. All of this, if not supported through therapy on time, might also lead to mental health concerns, like severe mental health concerns, leading to either depression, self-harm behaviors, showing suicidal tendencies, experiencing anxiety disorder, and many times maladaptive coping using, you know, addiction or substance abuse would be possible. So this is like a huge list of things that might actually manifest itself in adulthood if abuse is not taken care of or supported or healed in time.
You know, another thing based off, you know, what you mentioned is that a lot of times, I mean, besides the fact that children internalize the abuse, is that they also feel very violated, in the sense that, you know, this was a trusted adult. And we know that more often than not, the abuse to a child comes from somebody who they know. So in the case where, you know, the abuser is, you know, someone, either a relative or someone who's known to the child, how do you think that goes on to impact their attachment styles? Especially, like, you know, later on.
Right. So if I try to look at, yes, you are right. Many of the abusers are known to the child, and that is the reason why there is so much of impact also, because there is a breach of trust that has happened. if we look at it from the attachment perspective, any kind of long-term trauma would affect attachment styles. And children who have had the history of trauma, they, if you, you know, go through the therapy process with them in the adulthood, you would notice that they would mostly show insecure or disorganized attachment. If they, as a child, were neglected more, they might show anxious kind of attachment. If there has been more physical abuse, you might notice avoidant kind of attachment. Overall, if I would want to emphasize it, most of the severe trauma, you have to really get into the attachment styles in order to understand how to help them out or resolve the concerns. And mostly you would find disorganized attachments. Now, basically what that means is the adult would be chronically dysregulated, because the adult would be constantly triggered and it would not know, they would not know how to regulate themselves. So in order to cope, in they are going through constantly, they might use maladaptive coping, such as, you know, addiction, overeating or compulsive eating. And that might again further derail the whole idea of I don't like myself, I don't love myself, and that vicious cycle. So that strong, you know, attachment styles play a role in trauma or abuse. Yeah.
So another thing is, you know, which is often it does come up pretty often is, and you know, maybe you can throw some more light on this, is why do survivors of abuse find it so difficult to talk about what they've been through? And the flip side of being that, why do you think so many abusers are able to get away with, you know, what they've done?
Right. So one of the common things that we discussed is the child, the abuser is mostly known to the child. This is a huge factor, like huge factor in terms of the power play. The child has always known the abuser or the notion of adult. So if you see, socially, we are all taught to respect adults. We should be obedient. We should not reply back. We should not call out. Now, these are good things if in a structured manner. However, these also become strong factors in the child not talking about it because of the confusion of, can I? How can I talk about it? I am supposed to be keeping quiet, or I'm supposed to be obedient, and I'm supposed to respect this adult who is doing these many bad things with me. This is one of the things that we see. Children would hold on to their pain. There are other major factors also that we have noticed while working with children. There are many, many. One of these would be the child has actually not understood what is going on. Because the child is very small. There is so much of confusion, is that what is happening to me is, can I even talk about it? Is it normal? What will happen if I would talk about it? Will people laugh at me? So that confusion is then, you know, this whole idea puts the child off any kind of disclosure. And with child sexual abuse, if you would notice, there is a lot of shame and guilt also attached to it. The child who's going through child sexual abuse is already very confused because nothing about it is spoken in the outside world. The private body parts are always told that, okay, these are something to be ashamed of, or, you know, hide it, don't talk about it. Right. So if somebody touches those parts, the child would be like, okay, can I talk about it? Can I tell somebody, oh, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Many times children, most times children would feel that it is their fault. So if I am only at fault, telling somebody will not help, because there is no use. There is a strong notion that even if I tell somebody, they will not believe me.
Mm-hmm.
And this conclusion comes because of the past experiences that the child has gathered. That, if the child broke something and got scolded, the child made that correlation that, okay, if I am at fault and if I tell somebody, I will be scolded, because something wrong is always scolded and maybe I am wrong. So the child would not talk about it. Parents would not believe me. So they trust this fellow so much who's bullying me or who's abusing me, that my parents would take their side and not my side. Even the perpetrator or the person who is abusing tends to threaten the child during the grooming process, that okay, if you tell this to your mom, then I will do this ABC to her or to you. So the child is very, very, very helpless. One of the most important things that we have noticed while working is the child is in a very strong dilemma. The child is getting abused or hit by one of the close members whom the family is dependent on. So suppose if that person is financial provider also, and that person is hitting the child a lot or abusing the child a lot,
mm-hmm.
The child tends to get into this dilemma of if I report, they will take this person away. My mother, who is, who really wants to survive, will have nothing left. So I will become at fault. So finally, the whole option is to just keep on taking it. So that is also one of the areas where children would just not talk about. So it becomes very, very difficult for them to disclose. And that is what is majorly taken advantage of by the abusers or perpetrators.
I think, as you rightly pointed out, and this is so true of even adult survivors of abuse, that, not just the shame, but also this fear that no one's going to believe me. Or either they've had experiences where, they have spoken about what's happened and they've seen that the people around them are still very close allies of the abuser. And I think that's when, as a survivor, you do feel very let down, right? So how do you carry on sort of telling your story? And I think, again, that plays into this vicious cycle of how abusers get away with abuse. But coming back to trauma, and I know you touched upon this topic, and it's also a topic where you've done a lot of work in. But, how do you see that, some ways in which this trauma of abuse can manifest?
Yeah, so when we look at the, when you look at yourself and you find yourself getting affected by smallest of things,
mm-hmm.
and if there is a history of trauma, so as an adult, if you can look at my partner told me a smallest of things, but I got agitated disproportionately. That means it was nothing to be angry about, but I got very restless. That means somewhere I'm triggered. But this information is usually not available until and unless you actually go in for therapy. So I want to use this platform for everyone to look within and understand and see if there has been any past trauma, any kind of abuse. It is a good idea to go through the process of therapy, even in the initial space where one can identify the triggers. Then only would be able to pick up signs and do, a work in relation to resolution of trauma. So if I want to look at the signs that we discussed, if you are getting affected, if you have inability to trust, or if you are feeling too anxious, if if relationships is becoming difficult, just look back and see if there is any kind of abuse in your childhood. And if there is, it is a good time to reach out for help, to just understand what is causing your presenting concerns, to be able to resolve it, is what I would say.
Right. And, you know, for someone who might be an adult who's working with children, you know, or, you know, as an actor, it could be a relative, it could be a teacher, it could be a mental health professional as well, you know, how can they help the child sort of processing the trauma?
Right. So if we look at the children, because children and adults would fall into a very different level of work that would be needed. So if we're looking at the child who is going through abuse, and suppose abuse is stopped with the help of support system and right time healing is provided or right time therapy is provided, the chances of recovering or overcoming the pain is way higher. As compared to adulthood, where you have already developed a lot of defense mechanism to cope with the pain and there has been no support, there are a lot more layers that need to be worked on to finally be able to resolve it. So we'll look at it first from the child's perspective. So if as a mental health professional or a person who's just working with the child or observing the child, and suppose if they encounter those signs that we spoke about, that, okay, the child seems to be anxious, what is going on, right? One of the steps, most important step, is to provide a safe environment for the child to be able to disclose. The child is already very hypervigilant. The child is not trusting people in that moment. So helping the child connect, building rapport with the child, making the child really feel safe would take you to the next step of really understanding what is going on with the child. Once you reach that space, you will allow the child to talk, try to understand what's going on, and you believe the child. Because one of the things that the child is very much scared of is whatever I say, people would just brush it away. They would say that, oh, this is just a small matter. So believing the child is very important. We cannot choose to panic or overreact because the child is gauging our body language. So we have to be calm and supportive. Suppose if you see a child getting overwhelmed, because while narration, the child would start feeling the pain, then you'll have to then help the child calm down. Use some grounding exercises such as breathing, counting, you know, how many bulbs are in the room or how many stickers are on the wall will help the child come back to the present.
Right.
And then let the child talk. Let the child know that you would help them. And then when the child is settled and has told you everything, then it is important that you involve your own support system. Your own support system would basically means that many times we are not completely equipped on what to do next. And that is the right time when you see a concern, possibly you involve either higher authorities or expert NGOs who know the field, realities, and they would then guide you and help you in the process of making the child safe. Right. Once that is done, the child is okay, safe, then the child would need therapeutic support. So either referring the child to a counselor would help, or even the basic first level intervention might actually help the child to stabilize. So at ARPAN, we conduct these kind of training. So we have this basic counseling module that we train teachers and mental health professionals just to encounter the same situation that I'm talking to you about. How to identify that the child is in a crisis, how to then help the child out, talk to the child, and stabilize the child is the first level intervention.
Yeah.
So if everyone who is meeting the child, be it caregivers, be it teachers, mental health professionals, if they are trained into that basic level of first level intervention, they'll be able to spot it much faster and they'll be able to help the child much faster.
Right.
So this can basically help.
So one of the things, you know, that often as an adult or, you know, like a mental health professional, which you might encounter and maybe you have, especially when working with children, is how do you safeguard and help a child who might be living with their abuser?
Right, right. So now this is a very complex situation. This is much more complex than a child who is at a safe space and it was the past concern. Here, what can be done is, first we have to understand that even if the physical abuse is not happening, suppose if it's happening, we'll come to that. Mm-hmm. If it's not happening, still the child is living with the person who is the strongest of triggers for the child. So even looking at the person every day would keep the child very hyper aroused and would not help with healing. So if the child is actually going through any kind of, you know, hitting and, you know, and other kinds of abuse, one thing that can be done is to involve other trusted adults. So talking to the child, asking about, okay, this is the person that is causing so much of impact to you. Is there anyone who is supportive? Can we have a conversation with that person? So helping the child first identify the right people in the family, then working with that family member to establish safety guidelines, to create a safety plan that, okay, so for example, if a family member comes home drunk and every day hits the child very bad, what can be the safety plan that can be made along with the other family member who actually wants to protect the child? So first that part needs to be covered. Slowly, you will also have to see that the other family member was not protecting, even though they had the intent to protect it, maybe because they were not empowered enough. So possibly to work with that other family member towards the empowerment, explaining them what are the child's rights and what are your rights also. That part needs to be done. Possibly, if there is any way, working with the abuser is also important. Where, why this is happening can be worked out. Counseling with the child needs to continue, and while you have empowered the family member of their rights, they would know what kind of situation has occurred in the house and what steps they can take. So they can reach out to authorities, they have these particular rights, will make them actually take those actions. Mm-hmm. So that is what has helped children who are actually living with the abuser to handle the pain. Right. And yes, counseling would really help in such cases.
Right. And, you know, just coming back to one thing you mentioned when we were talking about, you know, how we can help children, is you spoke about, like, you know, creating safe spaces for children. Can you just throw a little bit of light on, you know, how can adults, like, for instance, if it's a teacher in school or if it's another relative, how can we create safe spaces in which children feel that, you know, that they are heard and that they will be understood and sort of validated?
Right. So what tends to happen is all the schools and the families have a particular structure to their daily schedule. So schools would also have it. So children are very much attuned to, you know, this class and this class and this class. A teacher can maybe create a space like, okay, post the recess is over, this particular time is our fun time where we can actually speak anything that we want, and now it becomes a safe space for you to come to me individually and talk. So while vocalizing, very clearly that I am there, you just need to come and talk to me, is a big enough space for a child to understand that, okay, I'm in pain and teacher has given me that space. Similarly with family members, you can incorporate no judgment time, you know, something like that. So 8 to 8:30 in the evening, both of us would, like, either one of the parent or both the parents and the child would sit and talk about everything, and this half an hour or this 15 minute talk will not be taken up in any form of, okay, you should not have done that, or okay, you should have done that. We would just listen, enjoy and share everything. Now these are the safe spaces where the child would feel that, yes, I'm accepted in all ways. There is nothing wrong or right here. That is what safe space is like. And these are the pockets one can be very creative about it, creating in their own spaces.
No, I said, you know, because that's something which, you know, people can look out and be more mindful of doing. But to sort of wrap up everything that we've discussed, you know, today, Anupriya, and I know we've spoken about something which is a very heavy topic for a lot of people. And I'm glad, you know, that we were able to have this conversation, because, you know, unfortunately, we can't prevent every case of abuse, but at least we can try and help someone who's, you know, had to go through it and just try and mediate and at least remedify the long-term, short-term implications that a child might have to go through. But I just wanted to ask you one thing, that if you had any piece of advice for someone who's watching this or listening to this, who is having a hard time right now with their mental health, what would that be?
Well, I would like to say that you can heal no matter how severe the trauma is. If you reach out to the right support system, as a therapist and as a mental health professional, I can be very sure that you would cross that pain space, because there is therapy to help. So you can heal, is what I would say.
Well, thank you so much for that. And thank you, Anupriya, for joining us and sharing all your knowledge with us. Lastly, for anyone who's watching this right now or listening to this, please know that if, you know, you're having a hard time with your mental health, things do get better, and there's always help out there. There's always hope out there. So please reach out and know that things get better and they will get better. So till next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.